Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Thistle Rugby Podcast, the only rugby podcast that cares about Scottish rugby. How are you guys doing? It is a Wednesday evening and I have chosen two of Scottish rugby's finest prospects for our Lions special edition. I'm here with Matt.
Hi guys, how are we doing?
And Alan.
Hello.
Thanks again for joining us. You're probably listening to us on iTunes or via the Acast podcast app. And the last few days have been incredibly busy chewing over the Lions stuff on our Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. We're going to get into that. Obviously, the Lions selection is going to be a big part of our episode today, as well as an interview with Scotland and Edinburgh rugby legend Phil Godman, who's got some really great insight for you guys, particularly Edinburgh rugby fans, on the future of the club. But as always, before we get into that, why don't we have a look back very quickly at some of the news from the Scottish rugby world this week? And it is with much delight that we announce that Big Brian, 21, 22, 23-year-old Brian, now he's aging so fast, has signed a two-year contract with Glasgow.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant news. On the age thing, can they not somehow find out what his age is by, I don't know, like DNA testing or something? Because he ain't got a birth certificate.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, he is 24 and that's it, all right? And in 2 years' time, he's going to run out for Scotland and he's going to have a glorious sort of 6-7 year career, I feel.
Yeah, I feel good about it. And he's reuniting with his old Waikato coach, Dave Rennie, when he comes over to Glasgow this summer, which is good news for everyone.
Yeah, in all seriousness, since he's been there, he's been played really, really well. Like, particularly in the Glasgow game that we went and the Saracen game, sorry, went and watched. He was one of the few to cope with the physicality. And for such a young guy, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. But no, I think that he was here on a bit of a trial contract, and obviously he's shown them enough to get an extension, so I think it's a really good signing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm sure Rennie's got sort of a say in the matter. I mean, he's been there since Brian broke into the Waikato team at 14, so he's seen how he's progressed.
I was reading about him. He's 130 kilos. He's absolutely massive. And for such a young guy, you know, what's he gonna do next? Keeping it in the boiler house down the other side of the M8, Grant Gilchrist has signed a 2-year extension at Edinburgh. Do you think he is the sort of player that can be a long term part of Richard Cockerell's squad at Edinburgh?
Yeah, I mean he's gonna be, I guess, because he signed a new deal. look. He was Scotland captain. I mean, he actually, like, he was ahead of the Greys and he was Scotland captain. And whilst I have never personally really seen why, there obviously is. And so, you know, hopefully he's someone who's had like a really bad run with injuries. And I think hopefully sort of if he gets like a good pre-season under his belt, Cockerell probably will suit his game slightly. And, you know, hopefully he'll come through.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember the time when there was chat of Toulon signing him? I mean, that just seems absolutely bizarre compared to the kid who potentially signed someone like Jonny Gray. No, I kind of agree that I've never quite got the hype around him, but he's had a lot of caps for Edinburgh, and I think that experience is actually very important in terms of building the team. And, you know, for Verne Cotter, who we've talked about as like being a really good coach, and for him to identify him as a Scotland captain at such a young age, he must have seen something that we're potentially not seeing. So, no, I think it is really good news. I think keeping the internationals at Edinburgh is a good thing. And I don't know if he'll be captain next year, but hopefully he can sort of be one of the main foundations for a bit of success at least next year.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on any further signings from the two pro clubs. But dropping down to Prem 1, it was the big finale down at Green Yards in Melrose at the weekend. And Ayr went down there and took home the title. What do you reckon to that, Matt?
Yeah, well, I think it was a fair reflection of the season that Ayr and Melrose have just dominated that league. The two sides are really packed full of high quality players. They recruit extremely well, and even if you look at their bench, it's full of really good players. It seems as if the final was a pretty tight, really physical affair. Ayr just sort of scraped it. I think it was 12-8 in the end. Four penalties from Fraser Klimo, who just at that level is just one of the best players consistently. I think it was a pretty good advert, really. I think it was a good crowd at the Green Yards. You know, pretty high quality physical game. And then the thing is, they're meeting again this weekend in the BT Cup final. So it'd be interesting to sort of see the matchups and just sort of see the dynamics of that match, seeing as they've literally just played each other a week before. But I think it's a pretty good sign that the club game's in pretty rude health.
Yeah, it seems great. Right, so then we have a look just before we get into Lions. So we have a quick look back at last weekend and talk about the games as the Scottish teams took on the behemoths of Italian rugby, Treviso and Zebre. Let's start at the low part. What about Edinburgh losing to Treviso? Alan, can you put some positivity on this one for me?
I was about to come in real negative. I actually don't care that we lost. I don't care that it was a bad performance. What I care about is we didn't even score a try. We must literally be... That must be, I generally think... I'm going to actually look into this. I don't think there's ever been another Pro 12 team that hasn't scored a try against the Italian teams.
I don't know if that's true, but Jamie Lyle, the BBC Scotland correspondent, was down there, unfortunately, and he said that Treviso have conceded 86 tries this season. And Edinburgh didn't even really look like scoring one. So, I mean, Matt, is this the new low? I think we've talked about lows for Edinburgh before, but is this rock bottom?
It must be. I mean, I think that's both the Italian pro teams that they've lost to this season, Zebre at home and Treviso away. It's just truly dire. It's not good enough. I think that even you look at the Edinburgh team going, and it wasn't that good, but on paper, but it's still good enough to beat a Treviso side that looks like a pub team in a lot of the matches this season. It's genuinely, I'm gutted that we've lost, obviously, but at the same time, I kind of hope that it's going to be the real kick up the backside that both Edinburgh as a club and the SRU need to properly make some changes and put some money into that club. Seems like signing news has been completely, you know, thin on the ground, so they need to do something, because that if they keep the same team as that next year, it's going to be more of the same, I think.
But do you guys think that there is at least the suggestion of a decent spine to that team? And when we've talked about, I mean, if you look in your pack, if you get Nell and Dickinson fit again, you've got two Scotland, like impactful Scotland props there in the second row. You've got players like Gilchrist and our old friend Ben Toulis, who are pretty decent jobbing pros in the Pro 12. And in that back row, you look at guys like Magnus Bradbury coming through, you've got John Hardy, you've got Hamish Watson. Like, that has the makings of a decent pack. Do you think Cockerell's got a chance of sort of whipping that into shape?
Yeah, I think there is a spine there. But I feel like this team just lacks so much confidence. You can sort of see it on the pitch with sort of the way they play. And I almost think this could be a sort of good thing. So if Edinburgh were to lose the last two games, sort of against the Dragons and Glasgow, they will definitely be in the bottom two. Because actually Zebra and Treviso play on the last weekend. And it's almost a good thing for Cockerell, because if they'd had sort of a mini little resurgence at the end, it's kind of makes it a bit harder to really come in and just properly sort of clean out and stamp his authority on it. But as what's happened at the end of the season in terms of sort of what appears to be sort of a complete collapse, he can sort of come in and really just come in, hopefully just come in real fresh.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's quite a... There's just the culture there has been pretty poor for a few years. And I actually think that a lot of those players are a bit entitled. We've had quite an interesting message from one of our followers on Twitter this week, which seems to maybe suggest that's the case, saying that when Solomons was still coach, he was berating Hidalgo Klein in the changing room. And fair enough, you're going to get a bit of sort of fireworks and that kind of thing. But it sounds as if Hidalgo Klein sort of went back at him. They had a slanging match, and it resulted in a sort of player revolt, which I think led to Solomon's eventual sacking. And according to the same source, it sounds as if a similar thing has happened this year with Duncan Hodge. And it seems as if with the results that Edinburgh are having, sort of having a go at the coach maybe isn't fair enough, but I suppose it just suggests that all is not well at that club at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that gives us a little bit of insight into Sam Hidalgo Klein's absolutely sort of disastrous form over the last sort of year, which has really seen him go from really pushing Greg Laidlaw for that number 9 jersey to now really falling behind Ali Price and Henry Purgos as a replacement.
Yeah, I think Hidalgo Klein's kind of probably the best example of someone that, I mean, I remember how excited we were sort of 3 years ago. He sort of came on the scene, he was playing against Wales. He's got so much just sort of natural talent, and I guess he's taken a bit of a Henson. Sort of, you know, yeah, like his form sort of dropped dramatically. And, you know, the hope is that someone like Cockerell can come in and sort of really sort of utilize that effectively, because he could be a good player. Him and Price could be sort of the two Scottish scrum halves for the next sort of 5-6 years.
Yeah, I mean, on his talent is far better than Kennedy at scrum half for Edinburgh. So I mean, you've really got to hope that where is the old Sam Hidalgo Klein? Let's hope Richard Cockerell can find him. Slightly more upbeat news: Glasgow absolutely thumped Zebra on Friday night. Glasgow's kids, essentially. It was a really, really top performance, actually, and really impressive performances from Matt Fagerson at number 8, who, for an 18-year-old, is a joke. He's eating whatever Brian's been eating since he was, like, 12. He is absolutely fucking massive, and he just looks like he is the sort of player, much like his elder brother, who is just going to fit into pro rugby and could be somebody that we see in the Scotland team in the next couple of years. Another awesome performance from the little monster, Nick Greig. Like, absolutely incredible. Like, he's not the biggest guy, but low center of gravity. And what he does is he just attacks the line, like, so hard. He hits a line. He scored one great try, just getting a sort of half tackle from, I don't know who the fuck it was for Zebra. I don't actually know any of their players, but who cares exactly. But he got a great line, and it really, really was a great performance, even though Zebra are crap. But, you know, this is a Glasgow team with probably an average age of early 20s, like 24, 25. And it just shows complete night and day with where Edinburgh are. In the, I reckon that young Glasgow team would easily give the Edinburgh side that were out against Treviso a run.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I know if the Lions tells us anything, you can basically base all your decisions on one game. So exactly. Matt Fagerson should go on the Scotland rugby tour to Australia after that.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking Lions Bolter actually after a big game, you know.
Yeah. But no, I agree. I think So Matt Ferguson definitely sort of came out in the... Came out?
Sorry, Matt.
Really sort of stepped up in the sort of Six Nations. And I think sort of, yeah, a couple of young players, Matt Smith as well. George, Matt, he was on the bench. George Horn was in the bench. Is it Lewis Wynn was on the bench. A lot of like really, really good young players. Really sort of stepping up for Glasgow. And also Chris Fusaro came back and looked pretty sharp. A man who looks like he's, since sort of that 2015 Pro 12 final, which I'm pretty sure he started, he's kind of, well, since that season, he's sort of kind of lost it a bit. He was really talked about as possibly being sort of the Scotland 7, and then obviously once John Hardy and Hamish Watson sort of gone past him. But he sort of looked really sort of sharp. Took someone on the outside, which is something I think I've literally never seen him do. So, no, good to see.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. And just another quick one. I mean, I think the young props, Alex Allen and Darcy Ray, like they gave the Zebra Boys an absolute doing all day. And you think that's one thing. If an Italian team's going to turn up, they're probably going to have a big and fairly sort of muscular pack. But Glasgow had complete dominance across the field. And I think going back to a bit of a fanboy moment on Nick Grigg, I think with, you know, Mark Bennett having ACL reconstruction, Hugh Jones getting his hamstring set up, I think you've got to take Nick Grigg on the Scotland summer tour and give him a run. And it's great to see more depth coming through in that centre position.
I tell you, he's a really big lad. It's Rory Hughes.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
You're not that excited about him.
I think that's all he is. I think that's why he got... He was a classic example of a lad who just developed quicker than everyone, and that's why he got selected. I've not been that impressed with him. He's quite a good athlete, but he's not like a... He's not an absolute beast, and he doesn't have much in the way of guile. I'm not a big fan. Sorry.
Because you're a weak little shit, mate.
Absolutely done. Sorry about that, Matt. The jury has spoken on that one, unfortunately.
Power-to-weight ratio and skill level, I'll take him on any day.
All right, well, let's set that up. That sounds like quite a good little event. But obviously, I just think it's great. Edinburgh going down, Glasgow, even when their season's pretty much done, giving the young lads a run out and coming back with 5 points. Right, so we get into the meat of the day, which is obviously going to be the Lions. But if just before we get into that, let's give it just a little bit of a plug for ourselves. If you enjoy what we're doing, please get onto iTunes, leave us a quick review, 5 stars if you're enjoying us, just like our good friend Ali Price's pristine haircut did this week, who said, "In a world of hot air, I'm looking at you, Stephen Jones, and anger. The boys create a podcast for the fans, an informative and humorous listen. It's reminiscent of some stellar pub chat with your mates. Even if it generally sounds like Alan isn't listening to what's going on, it is still by far and away the only Scottish rugby pod worthy of a listen." Alan, you're getting a bit of a pasting from our fans in all these reviews recently.
To be fair, there is a lot of times where I zone out at what is being said on this podcast.
That's all right, and that's your charm. I'm sure that's what our fans are doing as well, just sort of dipping in and out. But unless you've been living under a rock and we are your only source of news, you will know that the Lions squad was announced today by Warren Gatland and his band of English and Welsh thieves. And we've got two Scots, Stuart Hogg and Tommy Seymour. I think you would have said that they are the ones who you might expect to be in there, but there'll be a lot of aggrieved boys out there as well, and fans, judging on how our Twitter has been going for the last few hours. Matt, why don't you start us off and give us your thoughts on the Lions squad announcement?
Yeah, well, leading up, there was a lot of sort of bluster in what's turned out to be fake news about the likes of sort of Jamie Roberts going, and at one point Keith Earls going ahead of Tommy Seymour, and Donnacha Ryan being picked. And I'm not going to lie, I was angry. I was genuinely like, this is going to be the worst Lions team ever. I didn't have that excitement going in. But then it seemed this morning a lot of that got dispelled. And squad got announced. And I think on the main, I think it's a pretty strong squad. I think it's as strong a squad as he could have selected, pretty much. I think that be a few people who are aggrieved to not have been selected. I think, yeah, from our perspective, the headline only two Scots is, I think it's really, really bad. Like, I think that just for the overall sort of attitude towards the Lions and the overall concept. But then you sort of look into it and you sort of take a step back, and it's just such a competitive player pool that the guys who could have got in, like Johnny or Richie Gray, forced out by some extremely good second rows. The fact Johnny, Joe Launchbury isn't there as well, a sign of that. Hamish Watson potentially over Moriarty. But once again, you know, I don't think you can feel sort of too outraged by it. So overall, I think it is a pretty good squad. I still don't like Gatlin, though, or the coaching team. But hopefully, you know, they can do a job.
Yeah. I think the issue isn't, there hasn't been any, there's no sort of like real injustices. I don't think there's anything we can be like, how have you left him out? It just feels, and I think the English have a sort of a right to feel like this as well, is there's a lot of 50-50 calls where he seems to have gone for a Welshman. Whether it be like a Lee Halfpenny, Rob Kearney, sort of Launchbury missing out, Moriarty over both sort of Watson, Haskell, Rob Shaw. It just seems like he's gone for the players that he knows and trusts. And I think we talked a bit about how Gatlin sort of seems to have this really big influence over a lot of sort of the decision-making process. And yeah, he's obviously gone for the guys that he's worked with for, what, nearly sort of 10, 12 years, and thinks they can sort of do the job. It's sort of a real emotional roller coaster last night. I sort of found the Roberts chat infuriating, but quite funny, because there's a lot of English people losing their shit over Jonathan Joseph, who obviously went in the end. And then about 10:30 at night, when I saw that Keith Earls was going over Tommy Seymour, I generally got into like a hot sweat, and I couldn't speak to my girlfriend for a while. I was so angry. I just kept shouting, Earls, bloody Earls. But it's fine. It's fine. It's the Telegraph. It's fake news. Tommy Seymour is going.
Yeah, finally. But I mean, I don't think either of you guys mentioned him there. Dan Bigger chosen over Finn Russell in that sort of third choice 10 berth. I mean, we've been a little bit critical of Finn, myself in particular, with his sort of headless performances against England and Saracens. But then I was thinking, you know, over the course of certainly the last season, I think it's very, very difficult to make the case of Dan Bigger being more consistent or a better performer than Finn. And I just feel that that is the one 50-50 call where I feel that I think Finn can feel pretty hard done by on that.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think there was quite a lot of chat, even during the Six Nations, of Rob Howley potentially dropping Bigger for Sam Davies. So his place is very much under threat. To be fair to Bigger, I think you have seen him, particularly in sort of the so-called bigger games, like the England match, for example, in the Six Nations, he can really turn in big performances. But I think we were sort of talking about it earlier as well, that you've got two tens who are probably pretty similar in the way they run things, and then you've got a third option, obviously. And either you take someone who you think can close out games like Bigger, or someone who's going to go and win you something like Russell. And I just think that in the context of playing in New Zealand, it's going to be quite rare that we're sort of looking to close out a game, particularly if that's happening in the test matches, then something's gone something completely crazy. And I just think that Russell brings you something completely different. But then again, I do see the argument that particularly in that fucking English match, and maybe in the Saracens match as well, when so the chips are down in a big pressure game, he did just lose his head, I think, and that sort of lack of what's just mental strength that then affects your technical skills and everything has probably come into the decision.
So does this dispel the myth that the Six Nations is really the sort of the warm-up for the Lions? Because, I mean, Scotland scored 20 unanswered points against Wales. Hamish Watson pretty much single-handedly demolished the Wales back row. Finn played Bigger off the park, man of the match performance, kicked 100%. So I don't know, it just feels a little bit that you've got 12 Welshmen in the squad, you've got four Welsh back rowers, and I just think two Scots feels like a poor return for what was a really strong Six Nations.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think going to the bigger thing, I think he's been chosen because of that England game, and Finn's been chosen because of the England game.
Yeah.
Has not been chosen. And I think there is a few people that have been picked on past form, and I feel like a lot of what Scotland's players did right doesn't seem to have really been sort of picked up. Although it kind of depends how long you sort of throw this out. I mean, you know, Wales had a bad tournament, but they were about 3 minutes away from beating England. And after the first half against Scotland, I thought they were going to pump us. Yeah. Like, yeah. Genuinely, like, they could have been away in that game. And a couple of things, you know, a couple of small changes, and they probably would have won the Six Nations, because they only just lost to France as well. I don't think... We sort of go on about Wales coming fifth, but it's not like they were sort of destroyed by any team. They sort of could have beat. They could have won all their games.
Well, they were destroyed by us in the second half, at least. But I completely agree. We weren't really in it in the first half.
Yeah, I agree. I think another point is that we've talked about it before. The fact that Scotland didn't have any of the coaches on any of their coaches, than the likes of Gregor Townsend or Jason O'Halloran, on the panel. I mean, it just clearly affected the selection. Some of the 50-50s, I think if they'd been there, we would have got three or four, definitely. I understand the Townsend one, but I think O'Halloran not going, as we said before, is a real misstep, and we could have got some more players. So from that perspective, it is disappointing. And I don't know whether the SRU had a say in that, or whether it was completely his own decision, but I suppose in that regard, we can't really complain too much.
Yeah. Two things. I just want to caveat my comments on Wales, because I do hate Wales. And I felt I was being way too nice to them. The one other one, actually, is Richie Gray, who kind of been thinking about it today. And I do think, I thought he played really, really well, even in that England game. He sort of stood out as definitely by far the best Scotland player. And the Ian Henderson one does kind of bother me a little bit, because I don't think Ian Henderson is that good. And he's not going to start at six for Lions. He is not good enough to start six for the Lions, and I just don't think he's good enough to start second row. I think Richie Gray can offer you a real sort of dynamic ball carrying option in sort of the second row, which possibly they don't have.
I don't know, but all the stuff that's been said over the last couple of weeks is that Gatland doesn't really rate Richie Gray based on the 2013 tour. There's been a lot of stuff saying that he thinks he's soft, or he doesn't have the right sort of like mentality for it. It's been written a wee bit about his personal feelings towards Richie Gray, which I think, yes, you can see that in 2013, but I think particularly since he's moved to Toulouse and his performances he turned in the Six Nations, I think he has come on leaps and bounds as a player. So that's, I think, pretty unfair criteria to leave him out.
Yeah, definitely. I think this sort of comes... I still think you should have a neutral coach. I think it is ridiculous in this era that you have so many sort of rugby coaches that you're actually using the Welsh national coach to pick the Lions team. Like, and the fact that you now have obviously a skew towards Welsh players. There's so many sort of older coaches who are now working sort of direct rugby roles, who are not coaching anymore, like McGeechan did a little bit with sort of the 09 Lions tour, who could come in and just do such a good job. And sort of hopefully bring together sort of a collection of different coaches from all four of the nations. And yeah, it just seems a little bit like jobs for the boys, especially with that sort of like Wales and Lions kind of coaching setup.
I suppose you're right, but it's not exactly like Geach really favoured Scotland players in 2009. I think, what did we get? Two in the initial, or three?
Yeah, well, that proves a point. He was a neutral party. He came in and picked the right people.
I suppose Scotland were pretty bad in 2009 as well.
Yeah, I mean, they were literally dog shit, so...
But I think... I know it's not the same, but we know that there is going to be 5, 6, 7 injuries upwards on this tour. It's a brutal tour. The standard of the midweek games is going to be much higher than it was in Australia, certainly much higher than it was in South Africa in 2009. You've got to think that those Scotland boys who we've been mentioning, so Finn, Johnny and Richie Gray, Hamish Watson, are going to be pretty high up some of those lists for, say, if there's an injury in the second row.
Yeah, totally. And every tour is showing that the attrition rate is massive. And it seems if in the last two tours there's been quite a few injuries before they've even got on the plane. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah, I think particularly the front row is probably where you get, sorry, the front five is probably where you get the most injuries. So Johnny and Richie Gray, I would reckon at least one of those is going to tour. But then once again, you do have like Launchbury's probably next in line as a replacement. I think if you look at the front row, I don't know if Nell, if they would take a risk at him with his fitness. Hooker, I wouldn't be surprised if Fraser Brown has some sort of shot, but then once again, you've got Dylan Hartley. I think that in the back row, Watson has a pretty good shot of being selected. I think he was pretty close. And the backs, it seems to always have injuries in the back three. So Sean Maitland, who I think could have probably missed out quite narrowly, has a shot. So I think you'll definitely see a few of the players, and maybe even Greg Laidlaw, if there's an injury there and he proves his fitness. I suppose he can play 9 and 10 at a push. So I hope that more Scots go, and I hope that they have an actual impact on the tour and on the test team.
Yeah, I think I agree. Are we done on the Lions? We've vented on the Lions. Alan, have you got some final points you'd like to make?
No.
Well then, yeah, that is the final word on the Lions. So, I do. Oh no, he does. Here he goes.
I am very much of the ilk that we need to, obviously everyone's disappointed with the amount of Scotland players, but we just got to get behind it. There's a couple of our friends who are sort of giving a bit of chat about not supporting the Lions, and I just think, yeah, we're disappointed, but that just shows how much passion we all have for the Lions. And, you know, Hogg, you're hoping, is going to be a starter. Seymour's going to be pushing for that test team. And, yeah, let's just get behind it.
I completely agree. And I think if you look at the players which we're talking about are being aggrieved and missing out, so let's take Hamish Watson, Johnny Gray, and Finn Russell. Those guys are all under 25 years of age. And if they are as good as we believe them to be, in 4 years' time, that's them going to be in their absolute prime, looking to go on a Lions tour and push for test starts. So hopefully they'll get a shot of being injury replacements, get a flavour for it. But I just think Scotland is and has been a huge part of the Lions throughout its whole history. I think we've had a lean few years, but as this Scotland team continues to get better, I think we're going to play a big part in the Lions in the future. So let's go from Lions chat to a guy who I don't think ever really got that close. We had a chat with Phil Godman, Scotland and Edinburgh player. Really, really interesting, particularly on the change of coaching setup coming this summer in Edinburgh. So enjoy the interview, guys.
Well, guys, glad to say we're joined on the line by former Scotland legend Phil Godman. How are you doing, mate?
Yes, good, thank you. Legend's a bit far-fetched, but yeah.
Oh, no, not at all.
Don't sell yourself short.
thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us today. Really, really appreciate it. Obviously, news today, the Lions squad. What do you make of that?
Yeah, to be honest, I was, after the Six Nations, obviously delighted Scotland did so well, but I was concerned that after the England game that we might be struggling. And also, I think, given the coaches selecting, that you always go with who you know, and given we had no Scottish influence in the selection, I really thought that would count against us. So obviously Stuart Hogg would be a shoo-in, probably shoo-in for the test team as well at present. Delighted Tommy Seymour's in, really happy for him as well. I thought he'd be in, but after that, I thought we would struggle. The Gray brothers, they'd be fantastic, but again, second row is so strong. Launchery missed out. I would have thought he'd be a shoe for the test team. Launchery, you missed out today. You know, Hamish Watson, bit of bolter. You know, again, the back row's really strong. So, yeah, obviously having two in is not great, but I think given how long we've got to the tour starting, there'll be a lot of the Scottish players there on standby, on the reserve list, who'll get called up.
Yeah, definitely. I think we had some similar thoughts with guys that were few sort of unlucky to miss out, but at the same time, it is such a competitive field. And what did you make of the fact that, you know, it seems like Townsend and O'Halloran were both offered roles but turned it down? What was your sort of understanding behind that?
Well, Townsend, I completely understand, because he's obviously coming to the Scotland job. We want to take them on tour. O'Halloran, I don't know the ins and outs. Again, I think, you know, they probably wanted to be the backs coach, the main attacking coach, and I don't know what influence they would have had, but it's just a shame. you know, there's not that influence there. It does make a big difference because, as we've seen with the 12 Welsh players, and you know, they're all quality players, but you do, you go with who you know best, and that's natural. And you know, any coach would say that. Anyone involved in rugby or any other sport would say that as well. So that's human nature. I think for me, the one looking at the squad and the makeup of the squad, I probably would say this given my position.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
For me, the one who could feel probably most aggrieved is Finn Russell. Just look at the tens they've picked. I would think he would offer something different. And yeah, if it was for me, I would pick him over Dan Bigger, certainly.
Yeah, I think a lot of Scotland fans would agree with you, and probably three of us as well. So what do you reckon about the Lions' chances then, if you look at that squad? And sort of you mentioned that Hoggy's a shoo-in for the test team thing. Any others? I mean, obviously Seymour's only, but any other guys can push through with injuries? To make it into that team?
I think they would. I think Seymour's got a good chance as well. I mean, they've got a lot of quality wingers, but in terms of Seymour's basic skills, they're fantastic. You know, he's great in the air, which they'll use against New Zealand. You know, he's very strong in defence, which some of the other wingers, as good as they are attacking-wise, he's very strong defensively. So, say Hoggy did play, he's a nice foil for them, and they've got the understanding as well, which, you know, they're big on having guys with... you know, understanding, you know, say halfbacks that probably counted against Finn Russell with Dan Bigger and Reece Webb having that combination. So that'll count for Seymour in the back three if Hoggy plays. So they've both got a good shout of being the test team, which would be great to have two Scottish players in the test team.
So you must have had a bit of a small crossover with Hoggy when you got called back up into that squad in about 2012. What did you make of him as a player then, and how he's playing now?
Yeah, he's exactly the same, which is great, and that would be my advice to any youngster coming through. He just came in, you know, I trained with him a bit before that, a couple of years before that, and he just plays exactly the same as he does. Gets the ball, it looks like he's enjoying himself, and you know, he's an incredibly talented player, and he's obviously worked on his game as well. You know, defensively he gets, you know, he's had a bit of stick, but, you know, his attacking game is that good. You've got to have him in, and he's got a huge kick on him as well. And, you know, looking at his high balls, he's going to get pepper high balls. You know, he's responded to the high ball as well. That's a part of his game he's worked on. So, no, it's just good to see someone enjoying themselves on the pitch, and the fans see that as well. And, you know, he's great to watch. When he gets the ball in his hands, you get excited. And, you know, it's the same when, you know, I saw him back then as well. You just think this guy's got something about him, and it's just great to see how he's come through.
Yeah, definitely. What's he like when he's in and around the squad? Is he a good lad?
He is. He's like just as he probably comes over. You know, him and Finn Russell. You know, I don't know Finn. He kind of came after my time, but yeah, certainly just enjoying themselves, cheeky chappies, and that comes across in the way they play, which I think people like to see, and you know, obviously benefits their style of play as well.
No, definitely. I guess going back to sort of like Scottish domestic rugby, you know, you spent a lot of time at Edinburgh, and sort of now they're going through sort of a pretty tough time. And we've got sort of, I just want to hear your thoughts on sort of Cockerill coming in, sort of the move to Merseyside, and kind of what your thoughts are on Edinburgh sort of going forward.
That could be a long answer to that question. Obviously it's my former club. You want to see them do well, and you know, obviously they've gone through a period where they've struggled, and you know, at the same time, it's been great to see, although Glasgow arrived, great to see Glasgow do so well, and the job Townsend's done there has been phenomenal. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, Myer sides, you know, we could have moved there years ago. Why they've moved there now, I don't know. There's been talk of doing a, you know, a 4G pitch. We'll see what happens there. But, you know, we could have done that 15 years ago almost. So, a bit of a strange move. I do think they have to be away from Murrayfield, but it has to be the right move as well.
Yeah.
Again, compared to Glasgow, I think Glasgow have created the perfect model in terms of winning on the pitch, but also they've got right off the pitch as well. When I was at Edinburgh, we had a bit of success, but we didn't get right off the pitch. So we didn't kind of, you know, make the most of that when we finished fourth and second, got in the Highland Cup. Instead of kind of moving forward, we took a step back. So, yeah, in terms of Corporal coming in, you know, I don't see him being a quick fix at all. You know, it's going to take a bit of time to, yeah, get Edinburgh back on track. And, you know, Cockerell, I presume, will have 2 or 3 years to do that. And, you know, I know Duncan Hodge is coming this year. You know, he was never going to turn it around in the time he has. And if he was to be given a fair crack of the whip, then, you know, it would be interesting to see what he did. You know, any coach who came in at the time he came in would have struggled. So, yeah, I don't think Cockerell, I don't think Edinburgh are going to suddenly, you know, be top four, top six next year. But going forward, there's no reason why they can't be.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully he can make improvements. But yeah, it seems like a pretty big rebuilding job. So in terms of your Edinburgh career, maybe if you could just sort of talk a bit about how that started and maybe some of the career highlights that you had there, talking about a bit of success you had previously.
Yeah, well, I started after I left school. I went to move to Newcastle to get involved in Newcastle Academy and then signed pretty quickly for the first team. After that, I spent 2 years there with Johnny Wilkinson, which is obviously fantastic, training under him. He's obviously a fantastic 10, and, you know, for me as a young standoff, learning how, you know, what it takes to play at that level, the sacrifice you have to make. And, yeah, he was a fantastic player. In terms of Edinburgh, I moved to Edinburgh. It was a long time ago now, 2002, 2003, and when Frank Haran was in charge, and I think Duncan Hodge was there at the time, and I can't even remember the other 10. But no, again, that was good for me, learning from an experienced 10, and, you know, kind of played the odd game off the bench then, but quickly kind of established myself as first choice. And yeah, I love my time at Edinburgh. And I said back then, you know, we were probably the form team in Scotland, and, you know, we were first game, we finished 8th, 6th, but, you know, quickly we were into kind of top six. And then the last few years, 2008, 2009, 4th, 2nd, and then 4th again. I remember, I think Rob Moffat, who was coach of one of my final years, I think ended up getting, you know, sacked because we finished 5th. You know, that's kind of where we were at, whereas now if they finished top 6, they'd be delighted about. So, yeah, things change at clubs, but, you know, I had a great time. 8 years I had at Edinburgh. Obviously, the way it finished was, you know, after I got injured, I came back and I was playing at a time when Greg Laidlaw and Mike Blair were there, and when I'd been out injured, Greg moved to 10. So when I came back in, I was having to displace one of them. Greg was captain at the time, and obviously Mike was scrum half, so that was always going to be hard. But, you know, I felt that I should have got more game time off the bench, which was frustrating. But that happens, and I've been used to being first choice, so that was difficult. But, you know, that happens in rugby. And, yeah, as I said, I think when end of that season, maybe 2010, 2011, when we made the semi-final Highland Cup, Michael Bradley got rid of a lot of senior players, myself included. Now, I'm not saying Edinburgh have gone downhill since I left, but, you know, I am saying that. That'd be me. You know, I think given the guys that left, you look at the list that left, it was Mike Blair left, Chris Patterson left, you know, guys like Andrew Kelly, who'd, you know, one of the senior players, not a main player, but, you know, he'd been a stalwart of the team. Alan McDonald.
Stuma legend, Andrew Kelly, as well.
Say that again?
Stuma legend as well, Andrew Kelly.
He is a Stuma legend, absolutely. You know, guys like that were, you know, key to the leadership group, and suddenly you had them all just leave, and you had maybe one or two left. And so, yeah, I hate to say it, you know, they're good young players, guys like Matt Scott, Dave Denton, who had come through, and they're fantastic players, but you're thinking, where's the leadership coming from? You know, so it's no surprise to see them the next couple of years really struggle. And, you know, that started I suppose, where we're at now by bringing in guys from outside of Scotland, because Michael Bradley's argument was, well, we didn't do well in the whatever it was called back then, Pro 12, because all the Scotland players were away. And, you know, you're bringing in guys who are, you know, journeymen, basically, which is not good for Scottish rugby because it stopped young Scottish guys coming through. And we're still kind of, you know, we're still kind of recovering from that, to be honest. But, yeah, hopefully that'll...
Yeah, that sort of mimics the sort of words of one of your old colleagues, Marcus DeRolo, saying that Duncan Hodge was handed a pretty difficult hand, you know, with Solomon's being given the boot and him coming in and... being asked to deliver a sort of a turnaround and fight for his job. Do you think Hodge has been hard done by?
Yeah, well, listen, he's in professional rugby. He knows that as well. And anyone that's results-based, you don't get given a run of time. But no, in the job he's been given, to judge him, I mean, you'd have to give him a couple of years because it's not really his squad. I know he's involved when Solomon's was in charge, but, you know, Solomon's had a way he wanted to play and was the guy in charge, you know, and Duncan would have to respect that and play the way he wanted to play. I think we saw Edinburgh at the beginning, you know, Hodge's influence, and they played some really good stuff. But you look at their squad compared to, say, Glasgow, you know, it's night and day in terms of quality. And, you know, they've got some great young players coming through, but they need a few guys to come in there to, you know, probably up the quality they've got at present. And, yeah, I think you look at some of their games the last few weeks, and you talk about leadership, and a few guys get injured. You think, I think even last Friday, I watched the game, and the captain, Ross Ford went off, so he was going to be captain. No one really knew because, you know, there's not many of those guys in that. They're good young players, but you need that mix of good young players and senior players. But no, so listen, Hodgie, I know by speaking to players involved in Scotland and Edinburgh, he's very highly regarded in terms of being a coach. So, you know, I'm sure he will get his opportunity, but you can't really call what he's had now an opportunity because, you know, it's any coach would struggle with the job he's been given at present.
No, definitely. I get when you moved down to London Scottish. How did you find that down in Richmond and playing in the Championship? Was it 2 years?
Yeah, just a year. It was obviously after I'd got injured. I played one season at Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was kind of looking about. Obviously, it wasn't the best time to looking for a club after you've been out for a year and a half with a knee injury and not played much the year before. And I was looking at France, but, you know, if I was going to move to France, I probably missed that boat. It was probably a year and a half when I was playing regularly for Scotland and had a few good options. So London Scottish came in out of the blue, and I thought, yeah, it's probably not for me. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, I just want to get back playing, and I knew I'd play there regularly, and yeah, no, I loved it, to be honest. It was proper old school.
Yeah, it's a good setup down there, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's great, and no, I loved it there, and they gave me an opportunity to go down there. You know, the club was in transition. It was certainly going from kind of amateur, semi-professional to full-time professional, but there's some great people, just great rugby people involved in the club, and yeah, it was a proper rugby club, and I always look to see how they get on and see how they do. But no, I really enjoyed my time there, and that obviously gave me the platform to go back into playing for Newcastle in the Premiership again. So yeah, no, I really enjoyed it.
And how was that sort of the transition going from Championship to Premiership rugby, and how different was it, I suppose, playing for Newcastle compared to the years that you had at Edinburgh?
Yeah, well, obviously, the standard Premiership, I played there, you know, I went kind of full circle because I played there, I was 19-20 and then came back at the end of my career. So I was really thankful for that because I wanted to play and finish at the top level, and I did that, and I'm thankful for that. But the Championship is a fantastic breeding ground for young players, and, you know, that's where you look at the Scottish game, they're crying out for something like that. You look at the amount of players now, you look at the Lions squad now, the English players, the majority of them would have played in the Championship at some point. You know, I remember when on the Scottish, a few years ago, it was Jack Nell was playing. Obviously, he's not the Lions team, but he's an English winger. You know, Owen Farrell played a bit for Bedford. You know, all these guys have played in the Championship. So there's so many good young players, and it's kind of perfect step up to then go into the Premiership. Whereas, unfortunately, in Scotland, if you're playing in the Scottish Premiership, the step up is probably too big to go straight into pro rugby. And also, it's very hard for them. Say you're a very talented young player playing for Curry, it's very hard to say, right, we're going to take a punt on you, you're going to start in Edinburgh on Friday night. Just doesn't really happen. Whereas in the English Championship, you know, they'll get them on the bench, they've got links with clubs, Saracens, Bedford. It's a lot easier to come through. And, you know, that's the shame about Scotland. You just think, we can't afford to let anyone slip through the net. And I'm sure there will be guys slipping through the net.
No, definitely. At Newcastle, can I ask, how hard is it to tackle Sinoti Sinoti? Because he is like an absolute freak.
Yeah, no, he is. He is not. He's a great lad. He's the most chilled out guy ever in training. He trains at about 20%. Like, I don't think he's ever seen him get over a jog in training. And then if you saw him at training, you're like, this guy's useless. And then you get him on the pitch on match day and he's just a freak. Like, he's phenomenal.
No,
I think any team in the Premiership would have him. But yeah, during the week, he just laughs and giggles and doesn't really train. And then just come match day, he's immense. So yeah, he's the week to do it. You want that way rather than the other way around. So
So looking back at your Scotland career, you got 23 caps. Who gave you your first cap, and who was that against?
It was Frank, my old coach, obviously. Cheers, Frank.
Did he coach you at Murky as well, or was that after his time?
Yeah, he did 1 year, my last year at school.
Right. So he's all makes sense now.
Jobs for the boys.
Jobs for the boys, exactly. So yeah, he was coach of Scotland at the time, and there was Romania, so it was quite a nice first cap. Romania away, 1 minute, I'll take that.
1 minute, yeah, not bad.
So yeah. And then,
what was the Scotland squad initiation at that time in 2005?
I think it's the same as it wasn't too bad. It was basically if any player comes up to you and offers you a drink, you have to drink it. So, you know, at that time it'd be 22 players. You have to have as a drink of their choice. So I can't. It wasn't that bad, but you know, some guys have been in a spot of bother, especially if you've got a home match and you're in the reception after. And you got someone like Alan Jacobson drinking double shots of whiskey, you could be in a bit of trouble. I remember Jeff Cross being a spot of bother. Didn't help, he was concussed, I think, as well. So
that's a good advert for concussion in rugby, Phil.
Yeah, no, exactly. That was bad. It was fine.
And sort of through the caps that you had, what would you count as the major sort of highlights and memories that really stick out for you?
Yeah, probably. I mean, people talk about the Six Nations. Six Nations was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. But you ask any Scottish player, unless you're winning games, you know, and then the team was not won, obviously won the first game this year, which is great. You lose that first game and suddenly you're thinking, oh God. And it's quite a tough place to be if you're not winning the Six Nations, albeit the games are fantastic. So probably highlights wise, you know, obviously Australia win was great. We got man of the match at Murrayfield, that was a great win. But yeah, some of the November, I remember playing South Africa in 2007, which at the time they were world champions and they were the best team in the world, and we got beat that game 14-10. That was a shocking kick. But, you know, you'd think that wouldn't be a highlight. But I just remember playing that game and thinking we matched the world champions. You know, because you would play New Zealand, but we play their second team. And on that day, we played the world champions and we matched them. And, you know, I just remember we're throwing the ball about and having a good time. And, yeah, things like that you remember. So that was, you know, for me, thinking, yeah, that was a good game. I think they absolutely smashed England the next week. Again, kind of Six Nations, you know, beat Wales a couple of times, but again, going to France and running them close, just playing some open rugby and just having a real crack. And yeah, that's what you remember. You don't necessarily remember great, you know, albeit Australia was a great win and really special. You just kind of remember just really going for it and enjoying yourself and having a good time. And when I look back, I think, you know, I wish I'd done that all the time in every game. And that's what you'd say to any young player, you know, just go out and enjoy yourself, because that's when you generally play your best rugby and, you know, get the best out of yourself.
No, definitely. Would you have crossed Haddon and Andy Robinson then?
They were both my Scotland coaches. Sorry, on you go.
I was going to say, just how different were they in terms of, sort of like coaching styles?
Yeah, they were different, but you know, they were both quality coaches. I know both of them have had, you know, a bit of stick, as every coach does, for different reasons. But no, again, you ask the top players that played under him, and you know, Andy Robinson was a World Cup winning coach with England. You know, you don't do that unless you're a quality coach. And you know, Frank won. He won three games when they first went to Scotland coach, and you know, he was probably guilty of in 2007 when the game was changing and going really defensively, kind of going back on his natural style, which you know, you probably should have stuck to. But you know, his style was to play width, play wide, stretch teams. But after that, you know, they tightened up, and you know, Scotland had a poor season 2008. And when you're not playing good rugby, and you're losing, you know. At least if you're playing good rugby and you're losing, you're thinking we're having a crack. But yeah. Trinity and Nations are pretty miserable, Six Nations, Five Nations even, if I recall, Six Nations. I think, you know, if you're a Scotland supporter, you know, now I'm definitely a Scottish fan, and you can watch it and just enjoy the games. You just want to see the team have a crack and really go for it. And when they do that, you know, if they win, that's great. But if they lose, you're like, well, at least we had a crack. It's when you have games like England, you think that's not great.
Yeah.
I think that's one way of putting that England game. Yeah, not great.
Yeah.
So what are you up to now then? So you're working at Dundee High?
Yeah, no, I'm at Dundee High. So yeah, I've been there. I came here straight after I finished playing at Newcastle. So I'm director of rugby here, and kind of do the elite sport development, kind of sports development side of things as well. So no, I'm really enjoying it. I think, like many rugby players, my first 10 years of my career did absolutely nothing. Just played rugby. And then, but I went to London Scottish, you know, it's kind of 28, 29, a good time to go, and kind of tried out finance, insurance, all that kind of London stuff. And didn't really enjoy it, and thought, always thought about, well, I didn't always think, at that time I thought, well, what about coaching? I didn't fancy being a professional coach. I thought, I need to get away from that. And you know, so it's a perfect fit for me, being in schools. And so the next 2 years, when we moved to Newcastle, I did all my kind of coaching badges, did as much as I kind of those 2 years. My CV's like nothing for 10 years, and 2 years of kind of a lot of stuff. Yeah, so it looks at it. You kind of drag it out though. So I'm really enjoying it, and it's just great to work with. I really enjoy working with kind of, I suppose, the 15 to 18 year old kids, because you develop them so much at that age. And make a big difference. Whereas, you know, in professional rugby, it's, as I know, it's cutthroat, and you know, there's not so much development you can do in terms of kind of all round development. You know, not just rugby on the pitch, but you know, all the benefits rugby can give you off the pitch as well.
Yeah, fair play. So, what have you seen in the Scottish schools? Is a game healthy? I mean, obviously, you're coming at it from the sort of private side with Dundee, and you've had that sort of obviously Watsons and Murky have had a lot of success there over the last few years. But would you say that on the whole, the SRU are putting in a lot of support for the schools game?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that, you know, obviously my time playing at Edinburgh, I know the SRU got a lot of stick, but you know, certainly what they're doing now is, you know, it's really impressive, and that, you know, they're really putting. They put money, they're putting investment, you know, time and energy into the kind of grassroots, which you have to do, because they're the next batch coming through. And in terms of education, workshops, coaching, you know, all this stuff is so important. And you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. You know, they got the Hive, they started that. So it's all kind of coming together to make sure the next generation come through. Obviously, the schools have started. Schools and clubs conferences started as well, which, you know, has had kind of mixed feedback. But again, you have to make, you know, youth rugby competitive, and you need that edge, and you need those competitive environment. You know, for me coming in, it's new to me, but I think it's been great. From the school's point of view, the High School Dundee having the conference has been fantastic, and you know, I know a lot of the schools feel the same, and also you're able to manage their kind of player load as well. Which you have to do.
It seems as well that, like, in recent years, the strength and conditioning has become a massive part of it, and it sort of seems overall a bit more professional. Do you think that's like necessarily a good thing? And do you think that sort of the balance has been struck between that and the skill side of things?
Yeah, it's a good question because, yeah, when I played, I hated weights. I did nothing. You know, when I got into the academy at kind of 17, I started to do stuff. But yeah, no, now the kids are on for kind of 15, you know, heavy weights programs. And, you know, I still feel there's a balance to be struck there. But, you know, when you look at some of the first 15 teams now, you know, the conditioning of them's, you know, night and day from what it was in my time. And that for me, that's definitely the biggest difference. You know, obviously skill-wise, they're better as well, but that's definitely the biggest difference. And, you know, when you've got a team that's not done that and a team that has, there's a big, big difference. And you get some 16-year-old kids who could play professional rugby looking at what they've been doing. But there's a balance to be had. I still think overall they lean too much towards the weight side of things. And you know, I think it's not necessarily healthy. If I was that age and had all that, I'd probably be like, nah, it's not for me. And, you know, there's got to be a balance of keeping the enjoyment levels there, only 16, 15, 16 years old. So, yeah, but everyone's doing it. You have to do it. But there's definitely a balance to be had there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Phil, thanks so much. That was all super, super interesting. And, yeah, once again, thanks so much for your time.
No worries. It was good to chat. Glad you hear me waffle on.
Yeah. Nah, not at all. That's what we try and do in the podcast most of the time. So
yeah, you're very fortunate to have me in your podcast. And obviously, I'm just kind of, after I retired, deliberately just kind of slipped away. So
all right, yeah. So, you know, being so high demand.
You might get about one hit on this. Yeah,
no, not at all. Yeah. So yeah, great. Thanks again.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Well, that was really, really interesting. And I think just to finish off, guys, to reward you for hanging around this long, we are going to have a quiz. But just before we get into that, as another little gift to you, why don't we talk to you about Cornerstone? It is the best razor on the market. And if you buy it using our code Thistle at checkout on cornerstone.co.uk, you can have £10 off your first order. And that will get you a premium engraved shaft with your initials, and it will get you 6 of high quality blades. I shaved my face with Cornerstone this morning, and it's looking great. Phil Godman set it offline there. He's using Cornerstone every morning. So you guys should really get in there. Get onto cornerstone.co.uk and use code Thistle at checkout for £10 off your first order. Now, over to you, Alan, for a little bit of a quiz to finish us off.
Rightio. Right. 4 groups of questions, 3 lines related, and 1 I just made up after listening to Phil Goldman because I thought it'd be quite interesting. So there we go. Right, easy one to kick off. Really easy one. 4 Scotland players went on the 2013 Lions. Who are they? You got this. I think two in the original party and then 2 got called up later? I think. Oh no, 3 in the original party, 1 got called up later. That was it. Right, question number 2. 4 players played 1, 2, or all the tests in the 1997 Lions. 4 Scottish players. Who are those 4 players? I can tell you 3 started the first test, but 4 Scottish players played across that test series. Started across that test series.
Started?
Yeah. 4 players. Question. You struggled with that, mate. Couple of absolute legends.
I've got 3.
You got 3?
Yeah, so do I.
I think you might be, there was one that popped up in the 3rd test.
I think I've got it.
You got it?
I've got it.
Yeah, alright. Question number 3. There has been the last Scottish Lions captain was 1993. Who was he, and who were the last 2 before him? See how you do with that one.
Wait.
The last 2 Scottish captains.
So, including the 1993 captain, who were the last 3 Scottish Lions captains? And one last question. Between 2000 and 2010, there were 4 Scotland coaches. Who were they? Is that pretty easy? Yeah, that's too easy, isn't it? Well, we've done it now, so we move on. Between 2000 and 2010, there was 4 Scotland national rugby coaches. Who were they? Right. Question number one. The 4 people who represented the Lions in 2013, who were they? Dave, give me a name.
Stuart Hogg.
Correct. Hanny, what you got?
Richard Gray.
Boom.
Sean Maitland.
Yes. Final one.
Ryan Grant.
You got that?
Ryan Grant.
Right, 4-4. Nice, easy start. Right, second one. 97 Lions tour, 4 Scotland starters. Who were they? Give me some names.
Right, I'll do my 4. I'm going Tom Smith. I'm going Alan Tate. I'm going Gregor Townsend. And the 4th one, I think, is Rob Wainwright.
Dave, any change in that?
I only had Tom Smith, Tate, and Gregor Townsend.
Hanny takes 4 points. Rob Wainwright played in the third test at blindside flanker. Yeah. Came in for Lawrence Dallaglio, who moved to 8 to cover like Rod Burr. Do you remember? There was a guy called Rod Burr. Right. So, last 3 Scottish Lions captains. Who you got? You got to be giving me the 93 one.
I'll give you Big Gav all day. And then Jim Calder. Oh! The wrong Calder. The wrong Calder. I've given the wrong Calder, haven't I? Yeah. Oh, for Christ's sake. Fuck.
Would you like to give the right Calder?
It is Finlay Calder. I don't know the 3rd one. I'm going to kick myself. I don't know the 3rd one.
I don't think you get this.
Gordon Brown.
No. What? The MP from Kirkcaldy. Post successful rugby career. Do you mean Gordon Bullock, or was that actually a guy called Gordon Brown that I don't know of?
Yeah, Gordon Brown was a big second row from Troon. Your rugby knowledge is terrible.
Yeah, it is.
Not as bad as mine.
Mike Campbell Lamerton was the last Scottish Lions captain in 1966. So, yeah, there you go. I don't know who he went. Oh, New Zealand, and they lost. So there you go. And the final one, 4 Scotland coaches. Dave, you got this.
Matt Williams, Frank Haddon, Andy Robinson, and I can't remember the 4th one.
Oh, come on.
Between 2000 and 2010?
Yeah. Pre-Matt Williams.
Between pre-Matt Williams.
Post the 5 Nations win.
No, thank you.
Ian McGeachan.
Yes. Ian McGeachan, 2000.
Well,
he was earlier. He was before Jim Telfer, and then Jim Telfer came in, and then Ian McGeachan came back. So, yeah, surprisingly, Hanny takes the win.
Fairly comfortably.
I don't think I should be allowed back after my getting the Calders mixed up, to be fair.
Yeah.
And that was pretty bad.
I think we've developed a pattern of you haven't hosted a quiz, Dave, I don't think. So Alan and I need to take each other on because we're clearly the superior beings.
I actually think it would be better for me as well because I really feel that there's some gaps in my knowledge that are being exposed weekly and I don't enjoy that.
I don't want to do that because beating you makes me feel a lot better about my rugby quizzing ability.
Well, listen, we've all got our roles. I think then that's fine. I'm happy to be the guy who gets it all wrong.
You don't need to rush us. No one's still listening into this, so it's absolutely fine.
Yeah, we're into the real dearths. The real ultras are out there listening, and we do love you guys. But we're going to call it a day. It's been exhausting, the lead up to and analysing the Lions squad announcement. But we will be back in the coming weeks to chat to you guys. As always, follow us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod and get yourself onto iTunes, please, please. Give us some reviews, get us up those rankings, and we can keep talking about Scottish rugby to more and more people. But for another week, that is the Thistle. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Cheerio.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.